For those of us who have been going through the examine with Mick, you would have learnt how to tell your story, or are learning how to tell your story. So three amigos have been appointed to tell their story this morning, and Paul Osmond's going to be the first to kick off, and followed by Ben Claxton and then myself. So we welcome you, Paul. Come and tell us your story.
Thanks, Malcolm. So my name's Paul, for those of you who don't know me. I haven't really stuck too much to the formula, if you like. Although Mick's not a formula person, I don't think that we looked at through an examine. But it has been really good in light of the direction that we've been taking to sort of think back on where I've come from in my journey of faith, and to contemplate that and to meditate on that. And so this morning I'm just going to share some of that with you. So I really just want to turn the clock back about 20 years to start, to when I was in my mid-30s. At the time, I'd been working for a company for a long time, and I'd sort of been working for a long time towards what I saw as sort of the top job in the area that I worked for. And so here I am in my mid-30s, and I've just assumed that top job with all the trimmings that comes along with that. Nice company car, pretty good money. I had a nice home and a lovely wife and young family. So from a worldly point of view, things looked pretty good for Paul, really. It looked as though he was doing okay. But God wasn't in my life at that time, or I didn't think so. I just want to turn the clock back again from that point, about another 20 years, back to my teenage years. And I wasn't brought up in a Christian home. My dad was a provider and a really awesome guy, but he didn't have faith in his life. So my first contact really with the Christian faith was at the Otahoo Baptist Church when I was about 18 years of age. And through a friend, I was started going to a group on Friday night, which was a youth gathering called the Coffee Club. And I sort of had to chuckle about that when I thought about that, because I'm sure you wouldn't get too many rewas coming along on a Friday night to NBC to the Coffee Club. But there I was, and so how times have changed. But that was a really awesome time for me. I think I stuck around there probably 9 to 12 months. We had a lot of fun. We had really good times. There was no peer pressure that I remember. It was just really awesome. You know, there didn't seem to be any cares in life at that stage. And the one thing I do remember, though, is that I don't remember in the time that I spent there, because we used to go along to church on Sunday evenings as well. I don't remember ever being introduced to Jesus, you know, and I sometimes think back still on how different my life may have been had I found Jesus earlier in my life. So roll the clock forward now about 5 years, and I've met Pam, and we're getting ready to be married. We decided to get married in Otahoo at the Holy Trinity Church, the Anglican Church there. We did that on a traditional basis, because both Pam's parents and my parents had been married in that church, and so we wanted to follow that tradition. And again, we stuck around there for about 12 months, and Pam and I were actually confirmed in the Anglican Church. But again, Jesus didn't mean anything to us. And so we wandered off, started a family, and if I can roll the clock forward again to this period of in my life when I was in my mid-30s, and as I say, from a worldly point of view, things probably looked pretty good for Paul. But the reality was that I'd really been struggling with life for quite a long time. Things weren't going as I wanted. And as I say, I'd sort of worked towards this top job for a while, thinking that, you know, like from a worldly sense, that that's the thing you do. But 9 months after taking on that job, my life was really falling to bits. I was struggling. I finished up in a psychiatrist's office trying to sort my head out and sort my life out. And it was through that experience and that those meetings with that person that I came to a knowledge through a group of people that we sat down in a group and discussed life problems, you know, with people with having issues like myself. And it was through that group of people that I finally met God. But as I look back now, of course, I can see that probably God was working in my life right from those early days when I was at the Otahu Baptist Church. But I didn't know that. But that was just part of my journey. And so, for the first time in my life, I came to an understanding that there definitely was a God, and I don't think I'd ever discounted that in my life. I remember the J Dubs knocking on my door sometime in my adult life, and I remember saying to them, "No, I'm not interested, but you know, one day if it happens, it'll happen." And as I think about that, I'm wondering what I was really saying, but I guess what I was saying is, one day if I meet God, I'll meet God. And so here I am in my mid-30s, and finally I've discovered that there definitely is a God, and not only is there a God, but I've discovered that God loves me. But I still don't know that God. So what I did is I sought to find him. I started getting on my knees and praying because I needed this God in my life. And I did believe that, I guess through my previous associations, that this God was Jesus. I didn't go out on all sort of different tangents looking for all sorts of different gods. I believed God was the God of the Bible, that God was Jesus. And so I just got on my knees and started talking to this God that I still didn't know, but that I needed to know and I wanted to know. And, you know, the Bible tells us that if you seek him, that he will answer, you know. And sure enough, after about 4 months, he answered. And part of my talking to God was that I actually wanted to come to church. You know, the state I was in at the time, I knew that if I walked into any church and didn't feel comfortable, that you wouldn't see me for the dust. I'd be gone. And so I persevered in prayer, and the day came when I'd started doing a bit of running, which I found quite therapeutic, and particularly on a Saturday afternoon I'd go out for a run, and usually I'd sort of wander quite a way off. But for some reason on this particular Saturday, I didn't. I just stuck around home, around the general area of home, and for no real reason at all, and because I hadn't had any injuries, I pulled up lame, I think, with a tight calf muscle or something. And so here I was limping home, and a guy on the other side of the street called out and asked me, was I okay? And I said, yep, I'm okay, I'm just heading back home. And anyway, turns out the guy was Bob Pidgeon, who most of you would know. Bob was handing out leaflets to a Bill Subritsky meeting the following Tuesday night at Green Lane Christian Centre. And so I had a little bit of a chat to Bob, and I actually said to him that I was keen to come to a church, and did he know a good local church. At the time he wasn't attending MBC, but he suggested Manurewa Baptist. And that was an amazing day, really, because there was God answering my prayers, you know. And I subsequently went along to the Bill Subritsky meeting at the Green Lane Christian Centre the following Tuesday. I met Jesus there. I came along to MBC the following Sunday. I was the scouting party. I didn't bring the family. But on the door, I remember Ken Allen was on the door that morning, and he shook my hand and welcomed me. And, you know, all you door greeters, don't never underestimate your job, because it's a very important one. And I felt welcome, you know, and I enjoyed the morning. And after the service, Colin Area, who again many of you would know, sort of sat me down and had a chat to me. And, that was the start of my Christian journey, really, in terms of being a Christian. But yeah, all those years coming to that point, and as I say, really I didn't know that God was there, but he knew. And in those early days of being a Christian, I remember I went to Ken and Gwen's home group, and you know, and also Bob started attending MBC not too long after I'd come here. And I used to spend time with Bob, and he would mentor me, and we'd sit down and look at the Word, and they're just so important in sort of putting some cement into my faith. And so, you know, really that's my journey. That's where I came from. And God was in amongst it there. But it wasn't until I got to a point in my life where I had to acknowledge that and seek him, that he really came into my life, you know. And I guess here I am 20 years down the track now. I think we first came to MBC in September 1992, so it's almost coming up 20 years. And, you know, it'd be great to say that everything's been easy and plain sailing and all that sort of thing, but I mean, you know, we all know that that's just not life, you know, and life will always have its challenges. But if I could encourage you this morning, you know, I think if I, as I look at my Christian faith that I've been blessed with, and if I was asked to explain it simply, you know, it's just simply that I have a certain hope. I know for sure that God loves me, that He is real, that He sent His Son Jesus to die for me, and that one day, you know, I will be in His wonderful presence. And of course, in the meantime, He's got a Spirit that He's given me to guide me and lead me. So thank you for your time. Thank you for listening.
Good morning again. My name is Ben Claxton, and I'm married to Megan Claxton, and she couldn't be with us this morning. She's actually on tour with Te Fund with the Wetoto Children's Choir, which is awesome. If you get a chance to go see that, it's really worthwhile. I don't know if there's any more left in Auckland, but there is. Okay. Check out the website if you just Google Te Fund. If you're keen on seeing it, it's really, really worthwhile. The Wetoto Children's Choir. They're from northern Uganda, and most of them are orphans who have been brought into the Wetoto organization, which is where Naomi Dyack spent almost a year, or maybe a year, not too long ago. So check it out. So I'm going to share my story with you. I'm a very pragmatic person. I'm a planner, so I have kind of followed the formula of the Examine series, for those of you who are familiar with it, from the awakening through to the attainment thing. If you're not aware of it, it's quite complex, and I'm not going to go through it all, so I'll just start and stop rambling on, shall I? So I looked up, being a pragmatic person, I looked up what conversion meant in the dictionary, because I thought, when Mick asked, can I share my conversion story, I better find out what conversion actually means. And the best definition I found, apart from kicking a goal through goalposts, which is also a good definition, is something that has changed from one use, function, or purpose to another. So just keep that in mind as I go through my story. I was aware of God from a very young age. I didn't really understand God, as probably most young children don't. I don't know. I don't have children of my own just yet. But I loved coming to church, I loved going to Sunday school, and I loved learning, and I still love learning. I loved learning so much that if I wasn't in Sunday school, we used to travel around quite a bit as a family and go to different churches. Mum would get the church notices, and I would ask her to nominate a letter in the alphabet. She would tell me a letter in the alphabet, and I would go through the notices and have to circle every letter that she nominated through the church notices. And that, it was a win-win for both of us, really, because it kept me occupied, and so I wouldn't annoy my mum. But really, I was awakened to Christianity due to my parents' faith, really. My dad was a pastor at the Tikawiti Christian Fellowship, Lighthouse Christian Fellowship. I'm a pastor's kid, and my sister Lisa Carl is also a pastor's kid. So I owe a lot to them for sort of the foundations of who I am today. To me, family is everything. I love my family. I've been blessed with an amazing family. And if it weren't for them, then probably there's a feeling that maybe I wouldn't be a Christian today. So very thankful to them. I guess the scary thing for people who haven't been awakened to Christianity, for me, is that most people are actually quite happy where they're at. They think that's it. And that's the scary thing. Most people are pretty content with their lives. And where their awakening comes from, I guess, is up to people like us. So we moved to Auckland when I was 6, and we church hopped for a bit. We left the church in Tikawiti, and it was a bit of a messy kind of breakup, as far as I'm aware. I was only 6 at the time, but from what my parents have told me, it was quite a messy change. So we church hopped a bit when we came to Auckland, and I don't have too many fond memories about church in that time of my life, from about 6 until my early teenage years. I do remember we used to have our some services in the Manukau Council, the council buildings, and they had used to let us run free around the council building. So the fondest memories I have is just running around upstairs through like the council chambers and like stealing lollies and things like that. I don't know how they let us do that and why we were allowed to do it, but we kind of had access to the whole building, which was strange. So that's probably the fondest memory I have of going to church, which is a little bit sad. But when I got to high school, I met a girl called Rebecca Salisbury. And if it were not for her, then I wouldn't be in this church today, probably, and I may not be a Christian either. She was this amazing, vibrant, friendly person, and she was a magnet for people. And I was one of those people who was attracted to this magnet. So she invited myself and Caleb Sternebrink along here when we were 13, and we've been here ever since. It was at an Easter camp. Easter camps are great. That I really experienced God's saving grace for the first time. And early teenage years, you're very impressionable as a person, and it's really important that we get our young people thinking about God and Jesus and His saving grace. From a teaching perspective, young people, especially teenagers, are definitely in their formative years and where they're learning, picking up lots of different things. So it's best that they pick up good things, right? However, for me, it was not all peachy from there. Bear in mind that I was still a young teenager trying to find my place in the world, and I was still susceptible to peer pressure. And thankfully, I had mostly good people around me at high school, so I didn't get drawn into too many stupid or things like that. I still did many stupid things, but thankfully I had good people around me that would stop me. For me, the most influential point in my conversion story is, and remember that conversion means when you change from one purpose to another, was when Rebecca, who I talked about earlier, when she died in a car crash when we were 16. I had begun to grow very fond of Rebecca in my my early teenage years, from 13, 14, 15, 16. And although I never truly told her how I felt about her, I'm pretty sure she knew. I was that annoying guy who hung around her all the time. So she tragically passed away in a car crash when we were 16, like I said, and her death really shocked me back to reality. Sometimes your teenage years, you're kind of floundering around a wee bit, trying to find your place in the world and becoming more independent. So for me, that moment is what shocked me back to reality. It helped me to stop thinking about myself all the time, because teenagers are very selfish as well. If you're still a teenager, if there's teenagers out here, I apologize. But I think, having been there myself, I think we are, as teenagers, very selfish. So her death kind of made me understand that life can be so fleeting, and I wanted to do something meaningful with mine. So to paint a picture for you, for me, my life at the time resembled a train track that splits into two. And you know they have those dividers that kind of shunt the train from one track to another. I don't know what they're called, but some of my friends at the time who were coming along to this church, her death for them shunted them onto a very different track to mine. And they decided to stop coming to church, to give up on God, and to almost blame him for her death. So they started to travel down this different track and slowly distance themselves from God. For me, it wasn't blame at all. And I think I was lucky that I had been awakened to God at a young age, although I hadn't really maybe submitted, apart from that Easter camp. It took that to get me thinking, I didn't blame her at all. I actually remember time and time again after her death, night after night, praying that praying to God that He would take me as well. Because I, at that time, as an emotional teenager, I really, it took me ages to deal with her death, and it was a massive point in my life. It was during the same 16th year, and this is the part of the examine thing where you get to acceptance, for those who are familiar with that. So the same 16th year, we started a band called Mum's Dollar. And that gave me an outlet to express my thoughts and feelings and struggles with being a Christian. We almost split up, actually, after our first competition because we performed so badly. It was horrible. And we fought all the time. We drove in this car down to Wellington, and we didn't really know each other very well. It was a really terrible trip, to be honest. But her death, in a way, kind of threw us back together. So we were in this band for 10 years, up until a couple of years ago. And it was a great way for us to serve using the talents that we had been given. And all deep down, we wanted to make a living out of it, but I think also deep down we knew it was never really going to happen. But the thing that did keep us going was that we had countless stories from people who said we have or had made a difference in their lives through the music that we were making. And so for me, those 10 years from 16, 17 through to a couple of years ago were a very special time for me, and I got to hang out with some great people who are still here today, people like Tim Beal, Peter Wood, Dave Barr, great people who helped me stay true to the things I really value. So now that the band is finished, I've got a lot more time to pour energy into my work at James Cook High School, which is just down the road. And I'm still figuring out how I can share Jesus with the people there without getting fired, because you're not really kind of allowed to in a classroom environment to start talking about Jesus, because we have rules. But I, for me, I'm just trying to be a real positive male role model in their lives, like through coaching and just getting around some of these young people who don't have, for some of them, they don't have a whole lot of good people around them at home and things like that. So that's how I'm just trying to be Jesus to these people and see them as Jesus would see them, and not give up on them, not try and rescue them, but trying to empower them to show them what a difference they can make as well. So to finish up, there's always going to be things that down your roads, because everybody has got a story, right? There's always going to be things which are going to dent your faith momentarily. But the real challenge for Christians like me, and for those of you who have been brought up in the Christian faith with Christian parents and things like that, the real challenge for us is to not let life and work take over and become more important than it should be. So just like those train tracks that I talked about in the beginning, I think there's a real chance for some of us who take Christianity for granted to start going down that one of those train tracks and slowly distance yourself from God. And over time, it becomes almost less important. You might wake up one morning and realize that it's not relevant for you anymore. I think that's the real challenge for people like myself and for those of you who have been brought up as Christians, because we do take it for granted, I think. So I just want to finish with this passage, and it's a bit of a challenge to us and to myself as well. So it's from Hebrews 10:25, and it's that verse that talks about how we must keep on encouraging each other. I think we need to become more accountable to one another and challenge each other to be more honest, because as most of us will understand, people here don't necessarily have it as together as it seems when you see people up on stage, or you see people with smiley faces walking around church. So that's the real challenge, to be more accountable to each other and be honest with each other with our struggles and trials and temptations and things like that. So that's my story. Thank you.
I was brought up in the Salvation Army, so that sort of music is very familiar to me. That's a march by H.C. Goffin called The Red Shield. He's a New Zealander, and it went global. If it was on the internet today and it was a new thing, it would have been, what they call it, viral or something like that. But that's my background. Brought up in a Salvation Army home, steeped in tradition from both parents, going right back. Brass band music, and music as a whole was a way of life. Sundays, as a family, we virtually lived at the army. I was accustomed to hearing the gospel message. And right from an early age, I had this sense of calling and believed that Jesus had a plan for my life. I was 8 years old when I consciously made my first decision. And I say first because you'll realize later on. My first decision to accept Jesus. And at that time, I remember knowing his peace and his grace, age appropriate, of course. That was the first stage of my journey. Stage two, the challenges, came in my mid-teens. Life outside the shelter of the church gave me a different perspective. And like a typical lad, I began to rebel against the traditions that I was taught. I was a constant questioner. Why? Why do we have to go to Bible study, Mum? Etc. I began to challenge the authority of the church to see what they would do about it. You see, my life was full of double standards. I was your typical Sunday Christian. Would they let me continue to play my trombone when I constantly rebelled against their standards? Unfortunately for me at that stage, no one pulled me aside and counseled me and tapped me on the shoulder. But then one day a group of Bible-bashing lunatics, as I call them, who were running a halfway house in central Wellington, they came and began to join in the life of the church. These guys were pretty rough around the edges, but they demonstrated a hunger and a desperation, and in fact a liberty in and for God that I had never seen before. It wasn't too long before that same voice I heard as an 8-year-old was again calling me to a different life. Sorry. From the back row of the Salvation Army Citadel, one Sunday night, I walked through. And in the Sallies, they have this wonderful place up the front, for those that may be familiar, called the Mercy Seat. And I walked up to that Mercy Seat. And in a pool of tears, I gave my heart to God. That was the second time. In return for his cleansing and forgiveness. I then did the unthinkable as far as my family and friends were concerned. I chose to move into this halfway house and live with about 30 other Bible-bashing believers because I wanted my faith to be real. I wanted it to be real 24/7. Scripture and song became a hymnal and the guitar replaced the trombone. We learnt a new brand of worship expression. And I knew my heart was connecting with God. He was so real. The words of a song from Andre Crouch, "How can I say thanks for the things you have done for me? Things so undeserved, yet you give to prove your love for me. The voices of a million angels cannot express my gratitude, all that I am and ever hope to be. I owe it all to thee." And the chorus was, "To God be the glory for the things he have done." I got lazy and casual in my experience and my relationship with Jesus. I started living for those spiritual highs without paying attention to the cost of discipleship. And when trouble came, as it surely does in life, I went off and blamed God for stuffing up my life. I felt totally abandoned. I lost my heart for music and buried myself in my career. For 12 years, I had this one-sided dialogue. In fact, it was probably an argument with God. It was all talk, definitely no listening. Stage three. My wife, Stephanie, had rededicated her life back to Jesus. And on the inside, I was very happy for her. But it wasn't my time. The hurt, the disappointments were still raw. But I began to slowly socialize with a bunch of people from Petone. In fact, they were Baptists. Yeah. Even going to their home group. Of course, I only went for the food and would shoot off home before they got to the discussion and Bible stuff. But as I look back now, I can see how God was softening up my heart. I began to pick up my guitar, and those blessed choruses would come to mind, full of scripture, full of grace, full of forgiveness. Then it happened. I was at a Christian marriage enrichment weekend, and that's another whole story why I was there. But on the Sunday chapel service, we were given letters of encouragement. Some of the letters I received were from people I didn't know, but others were from the faithful at Petone Baptist who had been watching my journey of recovery and praying for that breakthrough that I only knew had to be the Holy Spirit. Another load of tears, bucketfuls. Something beautiful, something good. All my confusion, he understood. All I had to offer him was brokenness and strife, but he made something beautiful out of my life. The journey still continues. It's pretty rocky at times. But I'm learning to depend on an awesome God who draws me ever closer to his heartbeat. As Ben and the team come up to lead us in worship, let me just summarize this way. Never underestimate the importance of a child's faith. And to that, I want to take my hat off to all those Sunday school teachers over the years who have impacted my life, and I'm sure yours. Never underestimate the impact of those that are different, including Bible-bashing lunatics. Never underestimate the power of hospitality and godly friendships. Never underestimate the faithful prayers amongst us. Some of you seniors, I want to acknowledge you. You do nothing else but pray for their young folk. And I encourage you to keep that up. They don't know it. They don't need to know it. But God knows it. Thank you. And most of all, never underestimate the love of a father's heart. That love is for you and for me.
Thank you for the cross.